Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Losers, in other words.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Thank you for hanging with us today on a Friday afternoon. Run up to the NHL trade deadline Monday at 3. It's been the focus of a lot of our attention this week. And that continues as we welcome Matt Larkin back to the show. Matt's on the West Hur Hotline. He's a senior writer at the Hockey News. Matt, it's Chris in Buffalo again. Nice to talk to you.
Good talking to you, Chris. How you doing?
I'm doing just great. I noticed your Twitter feed earlier. Sorry, my dog's barking. Still working from home, Matt. I know
too,
you know what it's
okay.
Like. Yeah.
You might hear my daughter barking, so it's okay.
Will a trade happen tonight at like 5:56 p.m.? Is a Twitter poll you put up? I imagine that's just the reporter and you dreading your weekend getting ruined just as you're getting started. Is that what the idea behind that is?
Yes, you're absolutely correct. It's tradition known as the Friday afternoon news dump, and it's been quiet, the calm before the storm, all day today, so I'm still predicting it. You know, you're going to close up the computer for the night, get ready for dinner, boom, big trade's going to happen, and I'm still calling it because that's just the way the world works.
Yeah, well, I'll still be on the air getting ready to host Sabres pregame at 6 o'clock, so hopefully you're right. Maybe it involves the Sabres. I know we're like-minded in at least one way. When Florida made the move they made yesterday to open up cap space, I wondered about Taylor Hall there because they've got a ton of room and, you know, very few teams that are having the kind of season the Florida Panthers are having have that kind of room. Really, none have the room Florida has, especially after making the move to open up even more. How do you see a fit there? Because I think Florida's not like a team we're used to talking about necessarily as a traditional contender, but they're one of the very best teams in all of the league this year.
For sure, and I sort of describe it as any way you slice it, I think the Panthers are a fit. So if you look at it from a pure hockey perspective, they're a team that could use a little more scoring punch up front, especially on the left side. You know, Jonathan Huberdeau, of course, when healthy, he's their first-line left winger. But after that, on that side, there's a bit of a drop-off. Maybe it's Frank Vatrano, that kind of, you know, guy who's probably better off a third-liner if the Panthers had it the way they wanted it. And same goes for Anthony Duclair, who's been a little bit injured as well. If you were to get a Taylor Hall, even having it down here, he's still a bona fide top six role. He'd play on a scoring line. He would upgrade that group. And a lot of people are saying, well, what about, you know, the Panthers lost Aaron Ekblad, and they need to pursue a right-shot defenseman. So, well, do you include Brandon Montour in a trade? Do you get two for one, both pieces that you need to fill that spot in the roster? Maybe. I think the bottom line is, because of the cap space cleared by the Brett Connolly trade, the Panthers, they can afford to do both. They could pursue a Taylor Hall trade. And even if you didn't get someone like Montour or Rasmus Ristolainen thrown in, you could go get a Josh Manson. You could afford to acquire two impact pieces. And I think you have to if you're Bill Zito, the GM of the Panthers, because, you know, it really stings to have lost Ekblad, of course. But you've come this far. You're right near the top of the league. And this is a franchise that has been really just yearning for some sustained success. And you still have a shot. You have a good team. You have a great coach. You have Sergei Bobrovsky, who's had a resurgent season. You have Alexander Barkov playing at an almost MVP level. So I think you got to go all in. And the fact that they made that trade and they sacrificed one of their better prospects, Henrik Borgstrom, to me, you don't do that unless you're planning something big.
Yeah, well, that's music to our ears, because I hope that that's a team that's at least flush with more prospects, or at least a prospect that we can get behind, because I've been spending days, if not weeks here, Matt, pondering a Taylor Hall trade and sort of bracing for being disappointed and underwhelmed with the return just because of the marketplace and, you know, point of fact, the season that Taylor Hall is having. I mean, I know he's only shooting 2%, and that's ridiculously low, and luck will turn around, but I'm worried that Kevin Adams is in a very tough spot, and I think there's a lot of factors that are outside of his control, the pandemic and the economics being one of them. But I think Florida would be maybe a team that I could see at least getting a piece back that's not just a draft pick in 2022 or something.
That's right. And I think the Panthers are important as a fit, an important example, because, of course, like you said, you know, the financial landscape, it is tough. It's not just the quarantine, the COVID, but it's the flat cap, which is part of the ripple effect, and an $8 million cap. It's going to be tough to move. There's been talk of a third-party team maybe having to be involved, depending on who gets Hall. But the Panthers, they're a convenient trade partner, because you don't need that third-party team. You could just make it happen. And they do have some prospects that I think are in the right price range. I don't know if you could get someone like a Grigory Denisenko, who's got a really high upside. Maybe it would have to be just him for Hall. I don't think you could get someone that tier plus a first-round pick for Hall, just based on how poorly the season's gone. But maybe you get one or the other. Or maybe you get the next tier down. You know, there's a good playmaking center who's still got some upside, Lexi Heponiemi. Maybe you do him in the second-round pick. So I think you can mix and match, and I think the Panthers have the right types of assets. And it's true, you know, I think Kevin Adams is – maybe he's looking at 90 cents on the dollar or 80 cents on the dollar for Hall. But what works in his favor is, I still think, if you look at the players, especially rentals who are available, I don't know if any of them can match the upside of Taylor Hall. And as long as he's healthy, as long as there's not an injury we don't know about, if he lands in the right situation and, you know, a great legendary coach like Joel Quenneville in this hypothetical scenario, I think his potential can be unlocked. It's not like he's 35 years old. He still has a lot of gas left in the tank. And I think a team is going to take a chance on that upside. And if enough teams are in on him, it's going to drive the price back up, and maybe you do get that first-round pick.
Yeah, I love the sound of a prospect that you could at least get excited about. You know, that's not to sneeze at the pick either. Like, I'm fine there too. But, like, if I could find – my ideal scenario would be, you know – I don't think I'm getting an A-plus prospect, but maybe B-level prospect and a second-round pick rather than just a first or just the prospect. I think, like, that might be maybe realistic. You sound pretty bullish on Hall's marketability. Do you think that that is the case around the league? I mean, it feels like it's been a few years since since his MVP year that he really put up big numbers. It's not just this year. I mean, things have bottomed out here in Buffalo, and there's probably a lot of reasons for that are not just Taylor Hall related. But you think he still has the rep to get a decent return here?
I think he still does. If you look at the situations he's been in, of course, you know, everything that could go wrong did go wrong this year. And like you mentioned, the unlucky shooting percentage. He also, even when he joined the Arizona Coyotes last year on the trade, that's not a potent offensive group. So I still think we're not getting enough looks at Taylor Hall in an optimal situation on a contending team that has a really strong scoring line. I think that's why the upside is still there. And I just think the nature of the market, whether he's worth a first-round pick or a decent prospect or not, if there are enough teams bidding on him, it's just going to naturally drive the price. Same logic, you know, when guys get overpaid in free agency, it's because the market dictates it. It's because enough teams are bidding that you have to overpay to get him. And I think the same principle applies to trade assets. If you really want Hall, you think he's going to put you over the top, and there's another team dangling a second-round pick, well, you really want him, then you got to offer the first-round pick. So I'm still predicting the return is going to be respectable. It's not going to be, you know, what we would have predicted at the beginning of the season if we were forecasting him to be a rental, but I still think it's going to be something that helps the Sabres down the road. But I definitely agree with the idea that, you know, you want someone who at least has a chance to be in your lineup next year, whether it's a young player, a prospect who's close to NHL ready, because especially if you look at the frustrations of someone like Jack Eichel, you want to be moving things forward, and you don't want to be just over and over trading for futures and pushing the rebuild back year after year after year. You have to at least get some hope of a turnaround sooner rather than later.
Boy, that's such a key point. I'm guessing we probably talked to you at some point in the summer or into the fall, Matt, when the Sabres were making the moves they made, and they got Taylor Hall and they added Eric Staal. And, you know, a sidecar to winning for them has been, at least was at that time, was, yeah, like trying to defuse the Jack Eichel bomb from detonating, you know, and that in the form of Eichel just getting to a frustration point that there's no turning around from. And, I mean, there's no knowing right now. He's hurt. He hasn't talked in a long, long time. So we don't know really like what he's feeling or what he's thinking at this point. I think it's tempting to assume the worst because it's been another lost season here. But just how about the overall, like looking at this organization right now, Matt? I mean, it struck me talking in the first hour of the show that it's been 10 years since the Sabres were even in a position to add at the deadline instead of just sell. Boy, that is stark.
It is stark. And, you know, this year is going to tie the NHL record for playoff drought. And the way things are looking right now, it's hard to be overly optimistic forecasting next year. So I feel like there are pretty strong odds that this franchise is going to set a record for the longest playoff drought. And it's kind of scary that it almost coincides with the arrival of Terry Pegula for that entire era. So far, that's the legacy, and it's got to be painful. And I've said it before. I say it every time I come on the station. I like to say it because I believe this fan base is pound for pound the heavyweight champion of the NHL. This is a fan base that hasn't had a team in the playoffs for a decade, yet still is at the top of the TV ratings during the playoffs. That's how much people care about hockey in Buffalo. That's how much this market deserves a winner. So it's painful to see, and I think the really hard part is that it doesn't feel like things are any closer this year, despite the urgency with which the Pegulas behaved last summer with all the mass firings and bringing in, you know, Taylor Hall and Cody Eakin and Eric Staal, all these moves. You felt like the needle was going to move, and it, if anything, it went backwards. It feels like we're still at square one. So I have to imagine that's a very bitter pill to swallow. It still feels like this team could be 2-3 years at minimum. Like, that might be the best-case scenario in terms of getting back to the playoffs. And based on that, if you're Jack Eichel, you're looking at, what is it, 6 years into your career? I think it's six, right, without a playoff berth. Then the odds are, you know, it could be seven. And at what point do you realize, you know, I need to try this somewhere else? And at that point, does Kevin Adams have to start thinking about getting that giant return that you can get for Eichel?
We're talking with Matt Larkin, senior writer of the Hockey News, and previewing the deadline in the NHL, which comes on Monday at 3 p.m. I wouldn't expect you to be like ready to go really deep on the Sabres here, Matt, but they do have a decision to make with their goaltender here. Linus Ullmark is, I mean, they still have Carter Hutton, but his contract is up, and he has looked pretty bad for more than just this season, going back into last year. Ullmark has been pretty good. His numbers are actually, I think you might even call them great, considering the team he's playing behind. But he is also going to be an unrestricted free agent. And the Sabres do not have, like, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is the next ranking goaltender they have in the system. And he is, according to most people I trust, not ready to jump into the NHL next year. So I wonder what sort of market there might be for Ullmark, and if the Sabres can sort of, I don't know, work on two fronts. If they want to trade Ullmark because there's some return that's worth it, I think they almost have to go try to get one of the Columbus guys or do something, because they don't have a goalie if they let Ullmark go for next year at all.
That's right. And what makes things super complicated, as if it wasn't complicated enough, is the expansion draft, right? So if you decide you don't want to trade Ullmark, who's done pretty exemplary work, all things considered, this year, and you want to keep him, well, then do you make a gentleman's agreement to wait until after the expansion draft to sign him? Because otherwise, you could sign him and you could get claimed, right? So I think the Columbus goaltenders, that's a really good example, because you could trade for, let's say, Elvis Merzlikins, who is exempt from the expansion draft. It's only his second year in the NHL. So you could have a goaltender who's more of a long-term starter who's also ineligible to be picked by Seattle. So that's an intriguing type of idea. The problem is, if you're Columbus right now, you're falling out of it. I don't think you're going to be trading for a goalie who, in their case, would be a rental, right? In Ullmark, you'd want to be re-signing him. So it's tough. I think that's a very difficult decision. I agree about Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. He is still considered one of the top prospects in the world at his position, but, you know, the development has been maybe a little bit slower than expected. I would have guessed a couple years ago that he would be at the NHL by now, ready to be a contributor. He's still very young in goalie years, so there's no reason to panic, but he might need just a little more time to hopefully next season play a lot in Rochester, right? And that's an old adage that goalie coaches say. It's better to play a lot in the AHL than a little in the NHL. So ideally, you're going to have to bring in veterans again. I don't think it's even the worst idea to re-sign Linus Ullmark. But if you do, again, you have to make sure you're prepared. And if you're going to protect him, then you have to make sure you have a goaltender who's eligible to be exposed in the expansion.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of hoops that need to be jumped through right now.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm waiting to correct myself. I was kind of flippant in saying they don't have an NHL goalie next year if Ullmark leaves. They do have Dustin Tokarski, who's going to play tonight under contract, and he presumably is the expansion goalie guy. Like, he's the guy that they would expose. So they are covered there. If they want to re-sign Ullmark, I think they can expose Tokarski and they're fine. But beyond that, like, I don't consider Tokarski someone that would be in their plans for next year. That's why I said it that way. But they do have, I think, as far as I understand it, Matt, they've got that base covered. So we'll see.
I mean, he will be eligible. That's right.
Yeah. So you got to wonder whether Ullmark wants to, like, this is the thing we don't get to know. Like, is he interested in signing an extension? Does he know the size of the hammer he's holding over the Sabres? Because he would know what the depth chart looks like, that they don't have any other NHL goalies. Like, I almost want them to make a move for an NHL goalie now, just to keep, if they want to keep Ullmark, try to keep the cost down. Like, I feel like Ullmark can almost name his price if he's the only NHL goalie the Sabres have their eyes set on.
Yeah, it's a good point, and you could make a pretty easy case, I think, that he's been the team's MVP this year. It's just a question of, you know, if you're Ullmark, do you want to stay? And it depends. You know, Ullmark, the sample size is still relatively small for him, so it's not a guarantee he could go join a contender as a UFA and get to start. So, you know, if you believe that most goalies want to play above all else, there's still the appeal there of knowing he could come to Buffalo next year, and there's no competing with Hutton, and, you know, no disrespect to Karski, but he's not really a long-term threat to, you know, the starting role. So if you come back, you do get that opportunity again, I think, if you're Ullmark, knowing you're going to be the bell cow starter next year. So that, I think, is a valuable, it's not, you know, it's not money, it's not pure money, but it's a valuable component to dangle in front of him. You know, here you're going to play, and that's the best thing we can offer, rather than, you know, maybe you can get more money on the open market, but are you going to get that playing time you want?
Right. Just a couple of more minutes left with senior writer from the Hockey News, Matt Larkin, here on WGR. All right, so how about the Leafs, Matt? Like, what, you know, they've been mentioned in Taylor Hall, not, you know, feverishly, but it's been mentioned. Ullmark has even been attached to the Leafs as well at times. What do you see Kyle Dubas and the Leafs doing between now and Monday at 3 o'clock?
Well, I think that Kyle Dubas, the way he's been speaking in the last few weeks, is he sounds like he's ready to be aggressive. I think the Leafs understand, you know, through 40 games, they're off to their best start in franchise history. They have a unique opportunity in this North Division where a Canadian team is guaranteed to make the Final Four. They've been pretty dominant, pretty consistently dominant, I think, all season. They've looked like a very different team this year. So I think he recognizes the opportunity, and that's why he's spoken so openly about his willingness to move the team's top prospects. So whether it's going to be Rasmus Sandin or Nick Robertson, Timothy Liljegren or Rodion Amirov, it sounds like all of them are in play. It's just a question of, you know, what piece do the Leafs need most? There's been talk of getting that top six forward. I think the best fit is someone who's kind of a swingman who could play center in a pinch as well. And, like, you know, maybe a Mikael Granlund, if Nashville is willing to move him, they're playing a lot better. Maybe a Ricard Raquel in Anaheim. I think Taylor Hall, you know, if you want that reliable left winger, I know Alex Galchenyuk is playing a lot better right now. He's been kind of a really nice surprise for the Leafs, and it's changed their thinking reportedly a little bit if he continues to play that level. But again, that could also be posturing, just saying, oh, you know, we don't need to make a trade. You know, the way Galchenyuk is playing, maybe there's less urgency. I still believe the Leafs are going to be in on the big names. They understand the opportunity. And maybe, you know, you could still pursue a legitimate top four defenseman as well who can play more of a shutdown role. I think that's something the Leafs have still been coveting. And Ullmark, I think Ullmark makes sense. I think what we're seeing is the end of the Frederik Andersen era. Obviously, he's been hurt. He's been badly outplayed by Jack Campbell, who set the franchise record 10 wins in a row. He has stolen that starting job. And, you know, a month ago, the talk was, well, is Toronto going to trade for a starting goaltender? You know, let's say it was Darcy Kemper or someone in Columbus, for example. Now I think the conversation has shifted to who should be the best backup fit for Jack Campbell. And I think if you do trade for backup, you're going to have to move the money out, and that would be Freddie Andersen going the other way.
Right, yeah. Is Campbell to be trusted at this point? It's a great, great, great story. Believe me, I'm not down on it. But I wonder if there's not a little bit of just, you know, it's just right place, right time for him. Like, I wonder how comfortable they would feel, like, going into the playoffs with him as their number one.
It's an excellent, excellent question. And to me, it's a fascinating question because, my opinion on the subject is different than I think what most would say. But to me, the nature of the position has changed. It's so fickle. You have people coming out of nowhere every single season, whether it's Darcy Kuemper or it's Kaapo Kakkonen, who's sort of a mid-range prospect this year. There are guys just popping up left and right. Elvis Merzlikins had never played a game in North America before last season. He gets 5 shutouts in 8 games as a rookie. So if the position is this fickle, do you even know, no matter who you trade for, based on the goalies that are on the market right now that are reportedly available, you don't even know if you're getting an upgrade over Jack Campbell, no matter who you get. If you bring in Antti Raanta from Arizona, do you know that's a better goaltender than Jack Campbell in the long term? I don't think you do. So you have a goalie who's playing really well right now. The team seems to play different in front of him. And most of all, this goaltender has pedigree. You know, if you 10 years ago, Jack Campbell was considered one of the top prospects in the game. He won a World Junior Championship with Team USA. He was a first-round pick. I think he was 11th overall. So this is someone who was supposed to be a star. So the question is, are we seeing someone actually realizing the potential they always had? Or is this a fluky run? I'm not sure. But to me, goaltending is such a crapshoot today in the NHL. Since you don't know that any goal you get is an upgrade, you may as well just trade for someone with the mentality of it being a backup, not necessarily another starter, because you don't want to mess with what you have right now with Jack Campbell.
Right. Real quick, I know you got to get going. Any other Canadian teams you expect to be real busy? Montreal lost Gallagher. Winnipeg's had a good year. Do you expect these teams to try to outdo one another?
I do. I think Winnipeg needs a right-shot defenseman. I could see Winnipeg going after a Josh Manson or David Savard. I think the Habs, because of Brendan Gallagher's injury, he has gone to LTIR, which opens up a little bit of flexibility. I could see them. Mark Bergevin is pretty aggressive. I could see him trying to replace Gallagher. And then you sort of pull that Houdini act where Gallagher comes back in the playoffs when his cap hit doesn't matter, right? So you basically get to add a body and circumvent the cap. And then Edmonton, I know Ken Holland was talking today about being interested in swinging for the fences and not chasing a depth add, but more of an impact player. And, Taylor Hall, I think the Oilers could use an impact forward there, and it would be, for the story, it would be fun. But kidding aside, I do think he would be a fit for what the Oilers need right now, because you want that left winger that you can pair with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and then you can stop putting McDavid and Draisaitl together, because the team's more dangerous when they're on separate lines as centers.
Well done, Matt. Thank you very much. I hope for your sake you don't get a trade at 5:56 p.m. and you get to enjoy your Friday happy hour, whatever that includes, man. Thanks a lot for the time. Well, we always appreciate it, Matt.
Thanks. My pleasure.